Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Welcome you to Porch Talk. This is your host, Alan, and we're on Mars, the McGowan Art Retreat studio. And we have another resident artist here with us. He's a singer-songwriter. He's a guitarist. Just recently, well, your senior project at Mississippi State, right?
Yeah, I'm going into my senior year this fall.
Andrew Brister. And, well, man, I've been digging in and listening to your sound. I want to talk about influence eventually, but for starters, man, tell me a little bit about where you're from. Where'd you grow up?
I'm from the dead middle of Mississippi, kind of like where Highway 82 and 55 meet, right there in Winona, Mississippi.
Oh, yeah.
Grew up there, kind of between there and Grenada. Yeah, I'll take one, if you don't mind. I brought my own, but
that's way over there.
Yeah,
I grew up in Winona, that little area. Went back and forth between there and Grenada for about 16 years of my life, and then just kind of stayed in Winona at that point.
Very cool. What about, what was you doing for fun back when you was growing up, like back during the elementary and middle and high school days?
Man, mostly playing video games. That's up until probably this past 2 years, it's been nothing but video games, and now I've been too busy to really sit down and enjoy stuff like I wanted to. But even back then, I was still making, like, fan art. I was drawing, like, Dragon Ball Z characters, and that's about it. Smoking cigarettes at 13, you know.
Road tied.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of which. Yeah, man. So, your first artistic pursuits, would that be drawing? Or?
Yeah. I think the first thing I can ever remember is, like, getting those really crappy, like, Walmart watercolors. My dad would just give me a little regular piece of printer paper, and I'd just paint on that thing. I think the first thing I remember painting is one of the Ed and Eddie characters.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. First piece of fan art, Ed and Eddie. Ooh, I can't pronounce it.
I used to love that show, dude.
Oh, yeah.
That was a classic. And now, like when I was a kid, which I'm 34, but it was the end of an era, man. I guess you can still probably catch it on Boomerang if that's a thing, but
I don't think it's on Boomerang anymore.
I grew up with, like, Looney Tunes. Yeah. It was like, that's hard to find now.
Yeah, I remember watching that, Tom and Jerry.
Tom and Jerry, of course.
All those old shows.
Yeah, man. So what about music? How would you get involved with music?
Like, I've always listened to it. I think up until about 15 or 16. I don't remember how old I was. But I would just listen to it in the car and stuff. But my uncle, on my dad's side, he really liked the blues, and when I'd go to his house, I'd hear it. When I was a kid, I didn't really know what it was, but I knew what that standard shuffle was, and that kind of stuck with me for all these years. And then as I got older and into music and started hearing it for what it is, instead of just like, oh, it's just something I can listen to in the background, it really all came together. So
how old would you be when you picked a guitar up?
It was 2015. I'd have been 16 when I got my first guitar that September.
Yeah, I got
10 years ago.
I got my first one when I was 15, and it was a talent show. My best friend, he played cross Canadian Ragweed, Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Oh, okay.
Got my CCRs mixed up, but
there you go.
He played Proud Mary, and I was like, that blew my hair back, and I was like, man, I want to play.
Oh, yeah.
I want to rock.
This seems a lot cooler than listening to Waiting on the World to Change.
Not a bad tune, though.
Yeah.
That particular John Mayer album, that was my discovery for him.
Me too.
But went back on the previous album, which has Daughters, and I think my favorite song on that first album was probably Neon.
Oh yeah, that's a pretty good one.
But
hard. Very hard to learn.
Can you play it?
I can play it on certain days. Just like sometimes I get that bolt of lightning comes down, and I can play it without messing up. But every other day,
dude, I'm such a John Mayer head, man. Obsessed with it, and like I'm not particularly crazy about jam bands, but you know, Dead and Company, when he's fronting, I'll check it out then.
Yeah, I almost went and got to see them play at the Sphere in I think it's Vegas.
It is Vegas.
Yeah, but the flight costed too much, so I could pay for that nasty ticket, but the flight was just too much for me.
Well, dude, like with shows right now, it's crazy to me. Is like, and it's Ticketmaster and all those guys, but like, let's just say like to go to a show you wanted to go, and a ticket $100. By the time you get to checkout, you're at like $500. I was like, well, how?
Inconvenience fee.
Yeah, yeah. The correctly named. Yeah, convenience fee. It's inconveniencing fee.
Yeah, I was supposed to go see Dave Matthews. I think he was playing in Colorado. I was going to fly out there because his tickets.
Was it going to be like Red Rocks?
It might have been. I don't remember. I know I was going to buy like one of the field tickets where it's like they were much cheaper. But I mean, to go see a band like that play, I'd have paid for it. And the flight wasn't too expensive this time either. So
it's always cool, man. You go to a lot of live shows?
Here in Starkville, I try to go to as many concerts as I can, but like you said, like everything's just so expensive. Like the last concert I went to was actually a John Mayer concert in 2023. I think I spent like $1,000 for two tickets, so it's like
his catalog is so impressive, like the genre bending. Like you know, each album's a little bit different. And it's depending on like what kind of a mood you're in. You know, you can kind of there's a John
That's
Mayer.
That's why I like him.
There's a John Mayer album out there for you.
Yeah.
I like the Poppy album he just did. Nothing wrong with that.
Oh yeah, Sob Rock, it's a vibe is what it is. I think I heard him talk about it and he was like, yeah, it's kind of a joke album, but if that's a joke album then I need to get to work.
Yeah, and the music videos were fun.
Mm-hmm.
But she always does that. I remember, did you ever watch Chappelle Show?
Yeah.
You know, him and Dave Chappelle was and they had that one sketch to where
I really like the barbershop one.
That's We're going to see how they react to John Mayer.
Oh,
shut the hell up. Oh, man. Well, back to you. Cool Uncle introduced you to the blues. What about as far as like developing your own taste? Would it be just friends, or would you kind of pave your own way with it?
Yeah, so it's always been throughout the years, up until I discovered the guitar. It's always just listening to what everybody else is listening to. Like, my brother was listening to, like, dubstep when I was, like, 12 years old. That really hit. Like, some of my friends around that time listened to, like, Ellie Goulding, a lot of that British pop. What really, I think, was the precursor to all of it, I was listening to, like, Three Days Grace. I don't know what you consider, like, Pierce the Veil. I think they're, like, pop, post-punk, or I don't know. It's too many genres, but I was just listening to whatever everybody else listened to, and not to harp on the John Mayer thing, but the whole reason I got into music was because, like I said, Waiting on the World to Change, and I think he did a song, Shadow Days, was like the thing that pushed me over the hill. But the only reason I started listening to him was because I liked the girl. She really liked him, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to like him too. And now I think I'm a bigger fan than she ever was, you know.
I fell into the Taylor Swift trap like that.
Oh, yeah. I've been there.
Cause of a girl. But another blessing out of that one was Paramore.
Paramore? Yeah, I like Paramore.
And that the record with Ain't It Fun on it, that's probably still like one of my all-time favorite records.
Yeah, dude. I put it on every once in a while. The problem is I'll listen to an album or a set of songs and just play it on repeat and repeat for like a year. So it's kind of counterproductive to being a good musician and listening to new influences. But every once in a while I go through that phase.
How often do you think, like, I get it, man. I get stuck on just different songwriters or maybe even bands. And I do find myself like emulating that style, and it is kind of easy to get in a rut. Like, is you find that to be the best way to break out is just change what you're listening to?
Yeah, so for like the longest time, I was listening to him mainly, and there was a point from like 2017 to 2019, I'd gotten really big into Outkast. Like, huge fan. I started trying to rap, you know, failed pretty quickly.
Was it the Obadiah Parker cover? Did you ever see that one when he did Hey Ya?
I never saw that, but I was listening to him, a lot of like, I don't know what Joji is considered either. It's like kind of like really emo sad boy music. I was listening to that a bunch. And then I came back to like the more guitar centric stuff. And then, you know, I've kind of, I don't want to say I've reached ahead by listening to John Mayer, but I've been moved on to the Dave Matthews thing because I felt like I could play most of his songs. And then when I started listening to Dave Matthews, I was like, man, trying to sing and play this crap at the same time.
I don't know if it's true, but I always heard that he had a surgery performed that took out some of the webbing on his fret hand to where he could stretch and make those crazier formations.
Dude, I wish I got a little small hands, man. So I mean, get the surgery.
And that very well may have been what he would have done, man. I remember, like, of course, I think Satellites was the first song of his I learned how to cover. And just kind of moving on into him and, like, delving into it, I was like, I don't know if I'm wanting to put the time in for this.
it's been a struggle because, like, he's got a song called Tripping Billies that took me months and months to learn, but I was overthinking it. Now, I think that's a big problem I have when it comes to learning songs, but also writing songs. I try to overthink it.
Yeah. Well, dude, what about, like, exiting high school? Like, did you know you were going to go to college, or, like, what did life look like then? Did you have any idea what you wanted to do or pursue?
So, at that time, with the whole music thing, that's what I really wanted to do. I knew that's what I was wanting to do. I haven't enjoyed anything to that degree since playing Punch-Out on the NES. So, right when I graduated, I planned on going to, like, luthier school up in Michigan. I wanted to learn how to work on guitars, build it. But people were whispering in my ear, telling me that probably not a good idea. So I listened to them because I was young, socially anxious. So I was like, I didn't know what I wanted to do besides music. So I just went to Holmes Community College in Grenada, majored in business for a semester because that's what I thought everybody did when they didn't know what they wanted to do. Then I switched to IT the next semester, graduated with an associate's in that, then graduated again with a general studies degree. And around that time, it was just like kind of an identity crisis because I didn't really want to do IT. I didn't want to do any of that crap besides write music and play music and do all that. So when that didn't work out, I tried to join the Air Force. I went to basic training and then got an early discharge for some medical reasons. And then after that, identity crisis again, existential dread. And it was like 2022. I went to an open mic in Grenada for the first time after like 4 or 5 years. And That's kind of the like direction of the path. High school, didn't know what I wanted to do. Now I do, with a lot of dread in the middle.
Oh man, that's the way it goes. That luthier thing, that would have been real interesting. Like, I wasn't familiar with like guitar techs and like. I mean, I've got friends now. I mean, they stay on the road, and I mean, I got one. He's a guitar tech for Hank Williams, and.
Oh.
There's another buddy of mine. He was helping Drake out at one time.
Oh, wow.
Like running that production. And I remember when he got done helping Drake out, and I was like, man, you've been to all the biggest venues and the biggest cities. And I was like, man, you had to be like rubbing elbows. And he said, like, you would think that, but he said, like, even like being a part of the production, like, we're not even allowed to talk to the talent.
That's crazy to me.
Yeah.
Because I feel like. Even, I mean, obviously I haven't played Madison Square Garden or anything, but even like at a Bulldog Bash when I played there, or Cotton District Arts Festival, I love talking to the sound team because it's like, well, these goos are making me sound good, so I need to be nice to them.
Yeah, there was another story that I had heard. this wasn't like a friend or a buddy, but like the musician was trying to talk to them, and they were communicating.
Mm.
And it was like mid-show, the agency came up to him and was like, "You're fired." They were like, "For what?" And they was like, "It's in your contract that you don't talk to the talent." It was like they initiated that. Don't care. Which is like, I'm with you. It's like, yeah, whether it's light, sound, the whole production, it's like, those are my guys.
Yeah.
Like, want to take care of them.
Because to a degree, they can make your show or break it. And so, like, I'm not trying to piss in anybody's cereal, man.
Yeah. So, like, tell me about that, the open mic in Grenadas. It was your first, was that your first out and playing live? Or
that was, I would say in 2022 is when it was. That was the first open mic that I played that I fully sang a full, like, four-song set on. Previously in the same town, there was a coffee shop called Rave House Coffee. And I used to play there, or I used to go there as a customer a bunch. And then they started doing open mics there. And my buddy, who was the owner, he was kind of a mentor to me. He kind of, like, convinced me to get up on stage one day. And I think it was a couple months before, I don't know if it's a couple months before he died or a year before he died. He just convinced me to get up there. I've always been stage fright. Stage shy, not stage fright. I've had that too. And him really begging me to get up there really helped me get out of that shell. And that was the first time. I only played guitar for that time. And then eventually I sang one song. But in 2022 was the time where it really felt like I was doing something real and not just like a trial run. I mean, I wasn't very good at singing at that point. I wasn't very good at guitar at that point. But it was probably the most fun I've had in so many years.
And it comes a time to where, like, you got to have that person in your life that's kind of pushing you. Because, I mean, that is the step in the right direction. It was like some of the best guitar players or even, like, songwriters I know, they have still yet to get up on a stage and, like, share their talent. And, like, just talking to them about it, they get a little anxious and worked up about it. And I've been hosting the open mic in Columbus at Munson & Brothers for about 3 years now. And, like, there's a great place in town. They do they're teaching the youth guitar.
Yeah.
And once a month we'll have, like, a youth night for them to come out and go ahead and get them broke in. Like, get used to being in front of people.
Yeah.
Because I think, like, you can typically tell if someone kind of grew up in church and was, like, in the choir, maybe in the church band. And, like, that's a big plus for a lot of people in, you know, in this area.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, if you grew up and your family wasn't particularly religious or spiritual, it's like, well, you didn't get that opportunity.
Yeah.
And so it's an open mic is so essential in communities.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to kind of do some of that church stuff way back in 2015, I think, when I first started playing guitar, but I couldn't pull myself to do it. So that is pretty cool. I feel like I know what place you're talking about, the place that teaches. I don't remember the name.
It's Catfish Alley.
Oh, I think I saw them on Instagram recently.
Yeah, I saw Josh Gillis and I think Braden Sands. I mean, they've got a recording studio and what those guys have been doing, which, I mean, Josh is, he's been teaching music for years, but it just seems like later, like, the wind's kind of getting behind them, and it's in the sails, and everything's kind of moving in the right direction.
Oh, yeah.
Love to see that happen for people.
Heck, yeah.
And, so, Grenada Open Mic, the Coffee House, Holmes, College, how would you wind up at State?
So, originally, in 2020, I had applied here, and I don't think I was just ready for it. Like, I had a lot of anxiety going on. I didn't like the prospect of driving over an hour and not being in my own home. So that scared me off. And then I think it was 22, I had applied again, but I couldn't get into the major that I originally wanted to do. So I ended up applying to Full Sail University and did that for about a year and a half.
How was that experience?
It was okay. It wasn't my favorite, like, curriculum I've ever taken. It was a lot of doing the same thing over and over for, like, several months and not really learning how to increase that skill. And it was very expensive. So, like, I feel like here at State, I'm learning steadily. being pushed and challenged to a certain degree that I can appreciate. But at Full Sail, it was so slow. And then when it was fast, it was too fast because they didn't help you catch up. It's more like, hey, you better learn how to do this stuff immediately. Mm-hmm. You got a month to learn this stuff.
Back when I was graduating high school, I didn't think I was going to end up at college. And me and a guy that I grew up playing baseball with, he and I both like loved to draw.
Yeah.
And we were both going to go Full Sail and do the art program. Neither, and I think the closest one was like Atlanta, but I think we were going to try to do it online. But
that's what I did.
It never did work out. And like there was a, like kind of like what you said about like a little bit of a crisis. Like I've had times like I was looking back and I'm like, man, I wonder if I would have took that path, what would have happened?
Yeah.
And then like just a couple years ago, just to get better at sound production, I wanted to do some of that again, but I still didn't pull the trigger on it.
Yeah, I was going to do that at Delta State with audio production, but I just wasn't ready. A friend of mine also went over there and said, you may want to hold off.
So. Well, dude, tell me a little bit about your time here in Starkville and like just what your senior here at State now is. Yeah. What's the major going to be?
I'm a fine arts major with an emphasis in drawing. I plan on... I'm in the works now trying to develop like a video game or like
very cool
the Bible to one to show like all the characters, the scenery, items, and that everything that goes into that. But starting off in Starkville, I came to an open mic over at Dave's Dark Horse Tavern.
Great open
mic.
That's
where I got started. And after about a month, I think it was about a month. He approached me and my buddy Colt Hudson, who used to be a regular over there, for a split show. We were like, hell yeah, let's do that. So I think we both played like an hour and a half each.
Oh, very nice set, dude, right there. Because, you know, like standard at Dave's is three.
Yeah, sometimes it's four.
Sometimes it is four.
And sometimes 4 hours, you start have to dig into the songs you really don't want to play, but you know, so.
That's it. Yeah, a buddy of mine, dude, he played his first 4 hour set at Dave's, and he called me after, you know, it's like midnight, one in the morning. And he was like, I don't know how you do those 3-4 hour shows, dude, like by yourself without a band. He was like, I don't think I'm going to have a voice tomorrow. And I was like, brother, you have got to use that guitar.
Use that guitar and get a looper.
Yeah.
If you really want to jam and take a break and it's not the end of the hour, boom, get you a looper. It works pretty well.
Yeah, man. So tell me a little bit about the sound and like what you do today. Do you focus more electric or is it you kind of break it up between acoustic and electric?
I've been doing mostly acoustic just because I can play it by myself, and when I write, I can do it like that, and I may take it over to electric depending on what the vibe is for. I'd love to do more electric, but I want like the full band experience. Because right now, we are kind of like in that jam band territory. Mm-hmm. So we do play covers and we do originals. I try to do all originals. But we focus on acoustic just so that everything kind of doesn't clash. Because without like a really nice bass or like drums, the electric guitar is kind of like a nail against chalkboard, I guess is the best way for me to describe it.
It really can be. And I know what you mean. Like, it's really complimentary if you have, like, keys or a bass, something to bring out the bottom.
Yeah, we have a keys player, but without, like, a subwoofer, it's hard to get those bassy notes to really carry across the floor.
Absolutely.
Especially when the speaker's in the air. So, we try.
Yeah.
We do, a 30-minute set on electric, though. Just so that I can say that I can do that.
Kind of break it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Very interesting. And you mentioned, like, you have a sax player?
Yeah, I have a saxophone player and a keys player. We're in a three-piece band, just the Andrew Brister Band. Couldn't think of a good, like, band name. I'm so bad at naming stuff, and it's like, let's just go with the basic route. And if we want to change it in the future, we can change it. But, yeah, it's three of us right now.
It's a great way to go, I think, if you're, like, fronting it. And I know a lot of people, you know, it'll be, you know, first name, last name, and then the band, or, like, the band will have a name. I don't think there's anything wrong with that route. That way, like, if it's your songs, it's your material, and, like, if anything ever happens, it's not, like, a 3 days grace or, like, something like that to where, like, Well, these members, it's changed. Well, yeah. it doesn't matter so much if it's your namesake.
Yeah, and that's kind of like, I don't know if it was an ego thing or just a way for me to have the most power over like the sound that I want. I try not to sound like a douchebag when I said that, but the because I write all the music. Now I haven't had a session to sit down and write with the other two. Besides my sax player, we kind of, in a way, co-wrote this one song we have called Soul Food Jam. And yeah, just having my name on it helps me keep enough percentage of creative control. That way, if the lineup does change to in the future, at least it's still me for the most part. And I just want to make sure the vision that I have is at least like 60% there. Cause like I told my friend Jarrell, he's the sax player. I want to put a little magic on it. And if you got something to contribute to it, please let me know. Play what you feel. I don't ever want them to feel like they can't play what they feel should be on that song. So I just let him roll. Yeah. Jarrell's a beast, man.
Absolutely, man. And it's like that creative control is like, as long as everybody is comfortable and like is not overstepping their bounds.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, man, tell me a little bit. You mentioned you played the Bulldog Bash. Was that through like a songwriter competition in town, or
I applied to that. Yeah, I applied to play. It was me and Jarrell playing that time. That was really fun. It was. I really love the sound system those guys have. It's fun not carrying like my monitorless acoustic amp. And just having to pray that everything sounds good. And you got these, like, super high-quality, like, wedge speakers blasting in your face. And just like, I need more money.
Yeah.
I need more money to be able to set that up.
Tell me a little bit about songwriting. And I'm sure each song is different. But do you find that music comes first? Do the words come first? Or is it kind of like a lightning in the bottle to where it kind of all comes together at once? Like, what's been your experience?
Yeah. There's been times where I can pick and choose what goes first. Sometimes I'll write a little melody on guitar, or sometimes I can hum it in my brain and start with the music first. But other times I'll just be sitting there and think of a phrase and boom, that's like either the chorus or like the main motif of the song, main theme. I wrote a song, what is it? It's called like, it doesn't have a specific title. It's like Clouds, Head in the Clouds, In the Clouds. It's got this motif of like cards, like, you know, play your cards right. It's got that in there. There's another song I wrote around the idea of like chess. Electricity is another theme. That one is kind of the one that was like the hardest to write out of all of them, though, because it started out with music and then I wanted electricity to be like the gravity thing. So I did that, but then it just kept kind of flip-flopping. Sometimes the music would change. Sometimes the lyrics would change. It was this weird, like, domino effect of, like, sometimes time would reverse and I had to start step one. But the electricity thing stuck throughout the whole thing. It just went through a few versions.
That's something that I find with a song. And I think each one is living and breathing in its own right. But something I ponder a lot when I'm writing or working on a song is when's it finished?
Yeah.
Because, and depending, like with the open mic, depending on what time of year, I might have a violinist, I might have banjos, I might have mandolin, or it might be more rock and roll. And like each time you get a different shakeout with a band, the song melds and changes.
Yeah. I had a song like that. I don't remember which one specifically, but...
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same Game Parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
I started, when Jarrell started playing with me, the vibe kind of changed on it. I was like, man, I got to take it back. I got to take it out and just keep working on it. There was one song we do called Keep It Up. And it started off way different before Jarrell started playing with me. And then I started writing with him. I was like, man, I need to make this sound good with the saxophone. And it's finished now, but it took about 3 months of work to unfinish and then refinish it. So,
like with the, and I know it's hard to project, and I mean, it could change it on a dime, but like, what is like your dream for a band? Is it like big band, like full blown horn sections, or like a nine piece, or like, what do you want?
A nine piece would be fun. Because I really like dynamics when I'm playing shows. So sometimes there'd be a set where it's just me. Sometimes there's a 20-minute part where it's me and Jarrell only, and then sometimes it's the full band. So in the dream, it'd be the full, like, five-piece band, like, at least drums, bass, keys, guitar. Well, six-piece, I guess. Drums, bass, guitar, keys, and saxophone. I want to be able to, like, have so many different elements that can be taken out or put back in. If I just want to do a solo, a duo, I can change it throughout those four-hour sets of days.
Yeah.
That way people can have a break, too, you know.
Absolutely. and I find this, like, Red and the Revelers, they're a great they classify themselves as Swamp Soul.
Swamp Soul,
and it's a big,
yeah.
It's a nine-piece band. It's a huge production.
Heck yeah.
And, like, most of those guys, like, they all work full-time jobs,
mm-hmm.
and, like, I couldn't imagine trying to book a show for a nine-piece and make sure everybody gets paid.
Yeah.
Make sure
everybody's got the same free time, too.
It's got to be a nightmare, but, like, what we'll see them do, like, just in their off-season, because they do stay booked. I mean, they play plenty of shows a year, but each of them have their own thing, and they're –
yeah.
Very talented group
of guys.
There's
no telling what each of them, like, do in their own free time as well. You never know.
Absolutely. Well, dude, we're here at Mars, and I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the experience here. And did you get here Sunday?
Yeah.
All right, so it's been a couple of days. What are you expecting to find out here? What are you looking for? Like, what's this residency? What does the residency mean to you? As far as, like, your pursuit.
So this would be my first time doing anything like this. I really want to be able to... I think what I told him was I wanted to get away from the city and really hone in and be able to sit in the quiet and work on my thesis specifically, but just whatever comes about of it. Just walk around, be in nature.
You been enjoying the trails?
Not yet. I've been kind of cooped up working on some new music, working on some quick pieces of art, just trying to get my workflow up and try to figure out what's working for me right now. And so, like, when it comes next week, I can really pump out the good stuff and the trial and error portion. Yeah.
Well, absolutely. We have Joe McGowan here. He is with us. He's off the grill duty for the moment.
Heating up the grill.
Let me move this around a little bit. Wanted to talk to you. You were telling me a little bit about a website update and just a better way to kind of keep familiar and know what's going on here at Mars, right?
Yeah, I have a website. It's joemcgowan.com, and I've been a little derelict. I haven't put a lot of information about the residency on there, but I've been gradually working on that. So now I have a section. It's called Mars, and one of the tabs at the top is Mars. And you can click on there and read about the residency, read about our place, and then there's a PDF you can download or look at and read about how, if you wanted to apply, what, you know, and there's some requirements, you know, they're very basic. But the most important thing is to get me information sooner or later, because it's a list, you know, people that want to come out. And And then I'm starting to add bios and information about our past artists. So that's new. I have five up now. The first five we had, I have their bios and comments about their time here, which is really good. And pictures of their experience here. You're in some of them.
Well, there you go.
It's like a little slideshow web, I think that's going to be really nice. And, I'll have links to the websites and, if you're a musician, maybe if you're on Bandcamp or wherever, I can link to where, learn more about the artist.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. And man, just the plethora of people. I mean, and like more active, like it just seems like just a couple of weeks ago, we had Glenn Payne and then you turn around and we got Andrew. It just seems like everything is on the rise.
Well, it seems that way. It's not really more active or not. It's just more like I want to have a couple in the spring and a couple in the fall. So there won't be a whole lot in the summer.
Yeah.
So it's just so hot. I try to persuade people not to come in the summer if possible. It doesn't always work out. Like right now, it's not bad.
Yeah.
At all. But it could have been
pretty nice out today.
It's close, but whatever. But we do have a lot going on. Like tomorrow, we have kids coming in here. There'll be a few kids running around for a bug camp. They're going to be out here looking for bugs all day. So there won't be a ton of them, but there'll be several. And so there's different things happening regularly. I want to do more and more. I'm about finished with my gallery workshop space. Very exciting. I got art in there. I'm going to be able to show art and maybe do little workshops or whatever. So that's really cool. That's a big project I've been working on for a while.
I know it's all coming together, and there's sculptures, there's outside art, there's the huge mural that Julia did, and I haven't seen the inside yet. It's all coming together, though.
It really is, and it feeds on itself. Every time we have an artist here, no pressure, Andrew, but every time we have an artist here who leaves something behind, whatever it may be, whether it's an album, whether it's a piece of art, physical art, whether it's whatever, other people see that, and they want to...
Appreciate it.
They want to add to it. They want to be part of it. Like Glenn Payne, our last artist, did a
painting alien, in the
woods.
Right?
Well, other people have already asked, can I do something? I want to have something out of the woods. The sculpture that Lawson left us, and we were able to acquire other sculptors. Have been like, we already have people that are going to donate things.
I was going to message you earlier because I had an idea for one of those big
pieces. I mean, ideas are welcome. And this is your canvas.
Oh,
come
yeah.
on out. We want you to make your mark and leave it. And we have there's a fellow, Rex Jones, is a documentary filmmaker. He's doing a work about the Del Rendon Foundation, which is awesome, which I'm a part of, obviously. But he's also going to do a documentary about Mars. And he'll be, everything that everybody does, that could be in this. And you can see it at an independent film festival. All this stuff, I think, enhances the experience for the artists. For us, it helps us generate interest and potentially sponsors.
And just like, man, exactly what you said, Andrew, is, man, so many musician friends, like Abe, or I think you recently said that Jacob from Tuscaloosa,
yep.
He reached out. Just
Early James.
Early James. And like
Scott Levi Jones.
Scott Levi. But like this place is very meaningful, I think, when it comes to like a songwriter or anybody creative in that. But like, to exactly what you said, just to get away from the hustle bustle and just be able to just kind of relax. And
yeah, because it sucks living by a very busy road, and even at 4 a.m. you hear a 18-wheeler bust through there and it's so loud.
Yeah. So man, I think your time spent here, man, like I know, like you said, you've been busting out the thesis and working. And, like, what about as far as, like, events? Is there going to be the meet and greets, or is it a show at the... over on Stark Road? Or
we have a meet and greet planned this Sunday, June 8th, from 2 to 5:30. Assuming we don't have terrible storms, there is a little bit of rain in the forecast, which I hope it's good because Andrew and
Jarrell.
Jarrell.
Yeah, me and Jarrell will be playing.
Saxophone player, we're going to do a little bit of music starting at 4.
Oh, very cool.
Live music. And then on next Thursday, the 12th, we'll have a reception with some of Andrew's artwork and maybe some music as well. At the Del Rendon space over on GT Tim's Road off of
Start
Road.
Yeah.
So we'll be there for that. And then in between, anybody is welcome to come visit and, reach out to me especially and say, hey, I'd like to come collaborate. I'd like to see what Andrew's doing. Like maybe I'd like to talk to him about
Yeah, I got a few people planning to come.
Record label deal, whatever.
Yeah.
you know,
a record deal would be real good.
You know, but we're open for anything in between. But the two events are what we have planned. I'm tentatively thinking about a minor, smaller musical type thing this Friday, just because of potential weather later. It'd be fun, and why not?
Why not?
We got a singer out here. He plays guitar. Maybe we could do some jam session Friday. We'll see. We're on the fence.
Right on. Yeah. Dude, I wanted to talk just a little bit more about influence. We've talked a lot about, you know, some of the bands and influence you had, such as John Mayer. Before we got Relling, you mentioned SRV. Would that be your uncle? I mean, it sounded like he had pretty good taste when it came to the blues. Did he show you the Texas blues?
He never. The only thing specific, like artist, he showed me was Warren Zevon. He showed me Werewolves of London when I was probably about like 18 or 19. But I came across Steve Ray Vaughan through like the pilgrimage of John Mayer and like tracing back to where he got started from and all of those. So it started with him, to Stevie Ray, to Albert King, to, I want to say, Pee Wee Creighton is somebody who I found going through that journey of people. But besides John Mayer, Stevie Ray Vaughan is probably like my favorite guitar player and somebody who, when I come to play like electric guitar, that's who I aspire to be.
All right, I got to ask.
Yeah.
Picks? No picks?
Yeah, I play with a pick. I play the green Dunlop Tortex.
Because I know a lot of people, when they get into SRV, some of them will throw the pick away. They're all about the feel. It's kind of like, I'm blanking on the name of the band, Money for Nothing.
Dire Straits.
Dire Straits.
Yeah, the Mark Knopfler.
Knopfler. Like, he refused to use a pick.
I do some stuff like that, but it just depends on the vibe I'm going for. Sometimes if I want something more rhythmic, sometimes I do the finger picking thing, and then sometimes I'll like purse my fingers together and play it like I got a pick in my hand. Sometimes it almost works like a natural compressor, at least in my brain.
What about Steve Earle? Like, just speaking of Texas, like, Steve Earle, he comes to mind when I think Austin, Texas, and just like what all he's done for music.
Yeah.
A lot of people think Cottonhead Road, Cottonmouth Road? Copperhead Road.
Okay.
But there's so much more to his catalog. My favorite album is Transcendental Blues.
I don't think I've heard that one.
Dude, the first song on the album is Transcendental Blues, and that's probably my favorite Steve Earle song.
Heck yeah.
He's good.
Try it out tonight.
Yeah, put it on, man. Like, he's one of those guys that kind of opens me up when if I'm feeling like I'm in a rut.
Yeah.
And he's got a very interesting approach to just music.
Yeah.
Very cool. What about like Van Zant? You ever mess with him or?
I love some Towns Van Zant.
Yeah.
He makes me a little sad sometimes, so sometimes I gotta change it. But I really like the way he writes songs. Him and what's his name, James Taylor, both give me that kind of niche vibe, and I got a buddy who's like really big into James Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
But I like Towns Van Zant. I like what's his name? He's he's a Texas guitar player, Johnny Winter.
He's good.
Yeah, I like.
What about
I like
Gary
Winter.
Clark Jr.?
I don't listen to him as much. I think deep down in my brain, I'm like, he's too new. He's not that new, but I've heard him play a few times. I heard him play at the, I think it was either Stevie Ray Vaughan or Albert King's induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't have picked a better guy.
Yeah.
He's
pretty good.
He's a slayer. I've seen him live once. I think it was a Hangout Fest down in Gulf Shores.
Okay.
And... dude, it was everything that I wanted. Like, if you listen to like some of his records, like it's a song about a train, but it's 8 minutes on the record, dude. I swore it was 25 live, but the whole thing, dude, he's just ripping it.
Sometimes, like the one thing I'll say, the few concerts I've been to, sometimes I do like it when the jams are extended, but sometimes the 25 minute version.
No chorus, get to the chorus, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like, there's a version of, like, Number 41 by Dave Matthews Band. That was, like, 30-minute song. I'm like, yeah, I love this song, man, but how many solos can you really take for that long? Yeah, Gary Clark Jr. is pretty good. Chris Tone, Kingfish. I don't know if it's Kingfish, Chris Tone. I'm drawing a blank right now.
Either way.
Yeah.
Kingfish is really good. Marcus King or...
Marcus King is pretty cool. I've heard a few of his songs. He reminds me of, like, visually of CeeLo Green, and it kind of always threw me off.
Yeah.
But he's got a really good voice.
Yes, he does. And that latest album of his is really good.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, like, with Easy Eye Sound, you know, that's Dan Auerbach from the Black Keys' label. That's who Marcus King is on.
Okay.
I recommend that entire label. Like, Early James, he's on it.
Yeah.
He's really cool. But, like, everything that they do in that studio... is like they have to.
Mm-hmm.
Is like they have a studio band because like you always immediately know it after you spent some time with Easy Eye Sam.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sound.
Yep. That's a good thing about having very specific members that last for a long time because you build up that rapport and you really develop that thing together, and that's how you get that sound. That's like. I couldn't imagine playing with any other saxophone player besides Jarrell. He's me and him just kind of.
How'd y'all meet? Did y'all meet at State or?
We met. I'll save this story for another time. But we met through a friend who we are no longer friends with, but we've become close since then. And I think we've been playing together for a year. So we've been playing together since last April, so just a little over a year. And it was rough at first. I think I had asked him to come play at Georgia Blue in South Haven with me, just on a dime. Forgot my microphone, forgot my cables, and luckily he had everything.
Whoa.
And so he came, and we just jammed out. And I knew from that moment, I never thought I'd need to hear a saxophone on a cover of Daughters. And... it sounded really good, and ever since then, he just sticks with me, and he comes to all the shows, he gets paid good, we both get paid good, so.
There you go. And, man, just, we'll do one more, and then we'll start wrapping it up. But if you were to describe a Andrew show, like, as far as tone, sound, like, what kind of genre, like, what would you say? How would you describe it?
That is always the hardest question because there's been a few times I've had to, like, write, like, a short biography of whether it's just me or the band or the duo or... I always call it nostalgic jam band now. That's, like, what, like, our genre. Because we just kind of play whatever we feel, whatever feels right. And we can do anything from blues to something very poppy. Like, imagine anything between, like, James Blunt to Stevie Ray Vaughan. Sometimes we'll bust out, like, an old song from, like, the 40s. It just depends on how we feel and what the set list looks like. Sometimes we try to make sure we manicure the order of the songs. That way you're not getting the same vibe every song. Or maybe if there's, like, a slower section, we make sure we do a couple hyper songs. And then... And the genre-wise, it switches so much that it's hard to pinpoint. I'd call it, like, I think most of those kind of bands are just under, like, the rock label on, like, Apple Music or Spotify. So it's just, like, we're just a band.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, dude, let's do three more questions, and we'll walk it out the door. Question one, I wanted to talk a little bit more about your art and, like, maybe some of the work, your most recent work. I know at the beginning of the interview you mentioned, like, you would do, like, band posters.
Yeah.
When it comes to one of your shows, do you design your own posters or, like,
yeah.
just your art right now? Like, what are you into? What do you like to make?
It's just kind of all over the place. Right now I'm really trying to hone in on, like, concept art as being the biggest part of my senior thesis coming up. But I like doing that. I like to do digital art, character creation type stuff. I really do like to make the posters. I try to make all my posters when I can. I have sometimes if I'm just, like, strapped for time, I'll ask somebody to make me one. Just recently I had my friend Cam make me a poster, and she does, like, little sketchy doodles, and it just fit the vibe perfectly. I was like, yep, I don't have time. I need to get this done in 3 days, but I'm busy preparing to come out to this residency, trying to clean my house, take care of me, my dog, myself. But when I do have the time, I really like making it. Like, I made the one for my meet and greet. Kind of went for a 70s vibe. I made one for the band Make It to May last year. And for, like, other bands, I like making really goofy, like, funny ones. And I made a Yu-Gi-Oh! Inspired poster for them. I like doing that. I don't have any right now because watercolor is expensive.
Is that your preferred medium?
Yeah, like, in high school, about my 11th grade year, I really got into watercolor, and I did that for a long time. And I just haven't been able to do it because I can't afford it, and luckily I will be now. That's my big thing. So in place of that, I've been using, like, alcohol markers. They kind of work the same, in my opinion, where you can kind of blend them. You can, like, really build up layers of, like, color. That way, if you want something that's in between 10% and 30% of that color, I can get 20% by using two layers of 10%. So I've been using that a lot. I'm trying to experiment with new styles while I'm out here as well. Just, I've been doing some stuff that I normally wouldn't do. Maybe some stuff that in the past I've been kind of a critic of. And it's been fun. And even during this last semester, I've done things that I normally wouldn't do. And I'm just kind of doing whatever comes to my brain. I was talking about it earlier where, like, I don't have a set style for anything. You know, that's kind of inconsistent for an artist, but I just kind of make whatever I feel.
Nothing wrong with that. Yu-Gi-Oh! That kind of takes me back.
Oh,
I was going to tell you. Are you familiar with Isaac Denton?
Isaac Denton.
It's a great Instagram follow. It's Isaac Denton Art, and he does watercolors of, like, bands, songwriters, okay, and things like that.
I have to try him out.
And
look,
like,
at him.
He's, like, I follow, which my Instagram is, like, all I do is just follow artists, creative, mm-hmm, people. And, dude, like, anytime he releases something, it's like,
heck yeah,
it's incredible. Like, getting the likeness, like, he would do a, mm-hmm, watercolor of you, and it's like, there is no doubt.
Man, some people are crazy good with it. I like to, I'm very graphic in my traditional art style, I would say. I like really bold lines, really, like, vibrant colors.
Mm-hmm.
Very comic style. I have to look him up, though.
Check him out. What is your thoughts on the AI art?
I'm a big hater, man. It's like,
yeah,
there's a time and place for AI in general. I think the term AI gets conflated with generative AI.
Sure.
Like, because you have it in your phone, you have it on your computer. It's everywhere, but the version of AI people think of is more like the ChatGPT, or, like, I don't remember all the other platforms for it. I don't like using that sort of stuff for, like, visual or, like, audio. I've heard some AI songs that are funny, but it's like, you probably shouldn't be doing that. And I use, like, ChatGPT for certain things, but it's very clerical stuff. It's nothing that's going to benefit me commercially or anything. I just prefer people not use it because it's kind of soulless. It's
That's how I feel, yeah, especially when it comes to the music part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Even the art. Like, I've seen a lot of, like, AI art, and I've seen people try to pass on, like, of generated art, mm-hmm, piece, and they try to pass it off like they done it.
Yeah.
I find that disrespectful.
I've seen a few really popular bands been using AI art. I think it was, like, Ice Nine Kills, and I'm just like, yeah, man, I used to like y'all back in the day. I still like your music, but this is kind of BS. So,
totally. Well, dude, one last question to walk it out of the door is, just if there's a venue that you could play, and you'd be like, I made it, I've dreamed about doing this venue, or maybe,
yeah,
or maybe let's do a two-parter, or, like, when it comes to an art, I know you said that you're working, like, on a book or a, yeah, show. Like, what's some goals you got laid out for the future? Because I like reflecting back, like, from a year, and where's he, yeah, at? Did he hit it?
So when it comes to the fine art side of things, I'm hoping this video game concept that I'm trying to create kind of leads me into some of these companies that I've, like, looked up to my whole life, like Insomniac Games or, like, Naughty Dog.
Oh, you are a gaming head.
Yeah, those companies are like the ones that inspire me the most on what I'm working on now. Like Jak and Daxter, Ratchet and Clank, Sly Cooper. That's kind of like my childhood, and that's what I grew up playing. And I'd love to be able to say that, hey, I'm working for these companies. I could be a janitor and still feel the same like goodness about it. But I want to be able to. I want somebody to play something that I made and feel the same inspiration that I did 20 years ago. It's crazy being able to say, like, I played those games 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But on the music side of things, like, obviously the big names are like Madison Square Garden. That'd be obviously really cool to play. And we had the chance, me and Jarrell, we went and played at Eddie's Attic in Atlanta.
Very cool.
Yeah, we did a singer-songwriter night. We got to the finalist position. We didn't win. Although I personally think we had the better songs.
You know, in the Bluebird Cafe in Nashville, you know, that's a hot spot for a lot of, there's like, if I can get there, I feel like I'm moving. Eddie's Attic is one of those places.
Yeah. It was really cool. The monitors were kind of low, so I couldn't hear myself, but I think we did well enough. I think Antone's in Austin, Texas, that'd be a great place to play. I just want to play where my influence is played. Like, obviously, I want to play at, like, the big arenas, but it'd be cool to get in those, like, old juke joints and play in those old spots. Even, I think it's over in the Delta, where, like, B.B. King has his bar and stuff. I'd like to be able to play over there.
Yeah, I always thought that, oh, my gosh, I'm blanking on his name, but he's got the place in Clarksdale. He's a famous actor.
Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman's joint. You know, like,
Ground Zero.
I've always, like, that place is iconic. A big spot like that I always wanted to play, and I've had the opportunity to play there twice now, is the Blue Canoe in Tupelo. Like, because like when it comes to like venues like that, like what you're talking to Antone's, like I follow venues just to see who's playing there. Like Callahan's in Mobile, Alabama.
Yeah,
like they always seem to have their finger on the pulse, and it's like this is probably one of the last times you're going to be able to see somebody like this in a room this intimate. It's just not going to happen for you again.
I couldn't imagine that was the feeling when Maroon 5 played at Rick's, and that threw me for a loop. I was like, they played here way back in the day.
Yeah,
John Mayer played in Oxford.
If you ever go to the back of Rick's, just pull in the backside of it.
Yeah,
look at some. All the signatures, yeah. Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, you know, we've been back there. We've played on the Parrot stage a few times, but I'd love to. It's cool playing in a place where somebody that popular. I think Zac Brown Band played at Rick's a handful of times.
Zach Top just did.
Yeah, that was a big concert. I saw pictures. And I'm like, man, I want to be like that.
Yeah, that's next level. Well, Joe, anything else you'd like to add before we go?
Not really. We're looking forward to seeing what old Andrew does while he's out here in the next couple weeks. And like I said, contact us about a visit or try to hit one of the events we have planned. We appreciate all the support from everybody. Del Rendon Foundation, Mississippi Arts Commission, a lot of private people. You, Porch Talk. Thank you much.
Del Rendon Festival's always been good to Porch Talk and Porch Fest. Andrew, socials before we go. Is there a social media you're most active on that people can kind of keep up with you?
My most active is Official Brister on Instagram. And I have all my other accounts linked on there. I try to make sure I separate everything. So it's Official Brister for my main page and the Andrew Brister Band for the band page.
Well, very cool. All right, everybody, this has been Andrew Brister, and we are at Mars. Thank y'all for listening.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in one-pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free four-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free four-year warranty. Tonal.com.